Something to note, all myths have many versions and variations. For this episode, we've selected those we felt are the most dramatic and entertaining and supplemented them with additional research into Mesopotamian traditions. Because mythology comes from oral tradition, there's a wide variety across sources. Our myths may not always be the version you're familiar with, but we hope you'll enjoy them. The god Enki stood on a riverbank. His muscular arms were crossed, and a half-smirk curled the very edges of his lips. Below him, hundreds of humans toiled. Their backs were bent as they shoveled dirt from the earth, slowly digging a canal through the land's rolling hills. Enki gave a satisfied sigh. Thousands of years had passed since the humans had been created. By now, they were a well-oiled machine. They passed buckets of water in synchronized movements and flung tools into the dirt with expert efficiency. Enki's gaze fell on a small group of men taking a break by an encampment. One of them was bowled over in laughter, clutching his stomach as he shook with mirth. Enki's grin grew wider. The sound of human laughter was contagious. But his smile faded when he heard a distant, tinny ringing. The wind picked up.
Enlil, what can my brother want this time?
Enki strode into Enlil's palace at Ikur, ready for a fight. But the sight of his brother atop his throne stopped him. Enlil was pale and trembling. He had huge, dark circles under his eyes, and his skin appeared papery and sallow.
By the gods, you look wretched.
Ugh, it is the humans. I hear their chatter at all hours. I cannot sleep or even think. Oh, it is driving me mad.
I suppose that is the price of your dutiful workforce. But do not worry, brother. You did not look much better before there were humans. Why did you summon me?
This is your fault. They never stopped speaking because you gave them wisdom and resilience. I sent plagues, famine, drought, and still they manage to fester and reproduce. Their voices grow louder with each passing day.
As Enlil quivered with rage on his throne, his brother's brow furrowed. Enki had never been one to worry, but he had a bad feeling. Enki had always been petulant when he did not get his way, but this delirious rage was a new layer.
Fine. I shall speak to the human king, Atrahasis, and ask that he control his people.
No, the time has passed for control.
A chill ran down Enki's spine as Enlil suddenly calmed. His brother's sudden shift in mood was unsettling, but it was nothing compared to the words that Enlil spoke next.
We will wipe the slate clean with water from the skies, a flood so massive that nothing, nothing will survive it. And then we will begin anew.
Welcome to Mythology, a Parcast original. Every Tuesday, we present dramatic stories from ancient mythology and explore their origins. I'm your host and narrator, Vanessa Richardson. You can find all episodes of Mythology and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Mythology for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Mythology in the search bar. Today, we're exploring the Mesopotamian creation myth of Atrahasis. Atrahasis was a human king chosen to save humanity from the disastrous impulses of the gods. And when a great flood roared through the man-made cities of Mesopotamia, Atrahasis was ready for it. We'll begin the story of the great flood after this.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Atrahasis is a story that may sound familiar. Like the biblical story of Noah, it tells of a wise man chosen by the gods to build an ark and save the world's living things from a disastrous flood. But the Mesopotamian flood reportedly predates the story of Noah by almost a millennium and a half, and is likely the source for the Bible's tale. The earliest written version of Atrahasis comes from a set of Babylonian tablets that date back to the mid-17th century BCE. Though the first written version gives us a sense of its age, there's evidence that an oral story predates even that. This version of the tale most definitely influenced Mesopotamia's neighboring cultures, such as the Egyptians and Hebrews. The Sumerian flood story and the Epic of Gilgamesh, for example, are thought to be as old as 2300 and 2150 BCE, and both concern a disastrous flood unleashed by the gods. Atrahasis himself is known throughout various religious and literary texts as a wise man, the hero of mankind, and in some cases, an immortal. His wisdom and kingliness made him the ideal candidate to represent humanity and to hold the fate of life itself in his hands. Enki hurried from his brother's palace, his face streaked with worry. He'd always known his brother was a cruel and petulant child, but to destroy all of creation with a flood, it was beyond the pale. Enki liked the humans, and he liked the life of ease and comfort they provided him and the other gods, and now Enlil was going to ruin everything. Enki knew he couldn't interfere with his brother's plans outright. Enlil had seniority, and their father, the god king Anu, would respond to any betrayal without mercy. Still, he couldn't just sit by and watch Enlil destroy all of creation. Enki looked upwards at the sky above. Dark clouds gathered on the horizon. Enlil had already begun to call his storm. Enki had spent many an evening entertained by the great king Atrahasis, leader of the humans of Sharapok and beloved among all. He was kind, thoughtful, and could tell a great joke. And he was, Enki hoped, subtle. He found Atrahasis fishing on the shore of a lake before a simple reed hut. The king was tranquil as he gazed into the water. Enki felt a stab of guilt at disrupting his moment of peace. Atrahasis was not a young man. He was already over 3,000 years old, and this was likely one of his few moments of respite from his duties. Nevertheless, Atrahasis smiled when he saw Enki approach.
Ah, Lord Enki, what a delightful surprise.
I cannot stay long.
You look so somber. I have just the thing to lighten your mood. What does a landlord do when he sees his tenants happy and prosperous? Evicts them.
Enki smiled briefly, but his mind was elsewhere.
Curses.
My men liked that one.
Enki suddenly tensed as an idea came to him. He might not be able to tell Atrahasis about Enlil's plan directly, but if Atrahasis were to simply overhear him, then he would technically be keeping his promise. He cackled and suddenly shot to his feet.
Wait here. Your god of wisdom has some wise words to impart.
Lord Enki, what are you doing?
Enki hurried around the back of the hut and faced its reed walls. He shook his head with chagrin, certain that he was about to look very foolish.
Listen, reeds, I want to tell you something. You must listen well and ask no questions until I have finished, eh?
Are you talking to the reeds now, Enki? Your games have gotten stranger and stranger, friend.
Listen now, reeds. There will be a flood. Like no one has ever seen, it is already coming.
Silence followed, and Enki relaxed. Atrahasis was listening.
Reeds! You have to build a boat. as large as possible, sealed with tar. Large, I said. It must fit all manner of living things, and stock it well, Reeds, because there is no telling how long you will need supplies for.
Wind flitted through the reeds, causing them to rattle.
This will happen. There is no stopping it. You can only be ready, for you will doom all living things if you are not.
Enki then quickly vanished into thin air before Atrahasis could respond. Later that night, King Atrahasis frantically paced the large clearing behind his home in Sharapok. His mind was reeling. The god Enki was a good friend, and Atrahasis had always enjoyed their evening walks together. Enki loved a good joke and was generous with his laughter. But Atrahasis had heard the fear in the god's voice when he spoke of the flood. A flood like no one has ever seen. Atrahasis shivered despite the night's warmth. The thunder above made his heart beat faster. If what he said was true, he needed to get to work now. His wife, Iana, appeared in their home's doorway and called out to him.
Surely you are done for the day. I have supper here.
Iana.
Iana stiffened as her husband's voice caught. She hurried to his side, and Atrahasis told her about Enki's odd message to the reeds. As he spoke, the true devastation that awaited his people dawned on him. His body shook with panic.
I have to ask my men to lay the boards of a ship that they will watch sail into the horizon while they drown. It is the worst thing he could have asked me to do. I am the king. If they die, I should die alongside them.
My love, sometimes being king means standing by your people, but sometimes it requires you to forge a new path. We are wasting time.
Gather the animals. I will call my men. Do not yet tell the children. I want them to have some time before everything changes.
Though it was the middle of the night, Atrahasis rounded up the council of Sharapok and told them what he had learned. Terrified, they assembled the city's best carpenters and builders and began work at once in Atrahasis' yard. But it was not soon enough. The very next morning, the rain began. Coming up, Atrahasis races to build a ship large enough to save creation. Now, back to the story. King Atrahasis was warned by the god Enki that a great flood was coming. It would not only wipe out humanity, but all the life on the Earth, unless Atrahasis could save it. In order to escape the violent waters unscathed, Atrahasis was tasked with building a ship that could withstand the flood. He had just gotten to work on the build when the rain began. Atrahasis toiled with his men in the deluge. He slapped down boards and directed arriving materials, but the ship needed to be immense, and they soon realized they did not have enough wood available. With a heavy heart, Atrahasis directed his men to dismantle his house. His tears mixed with the rain as he frantically hammered. He had built this house with his bare hands. His children had been born here, and now he was ripping it apart. Iana stood nearby, doing her best to shelter their children from the rain. Atrahasis looked over, his tearful gaze meeting his wife's as they silently mourned the loss. The thunder echoed above, reminding him of what was at stake. Construction proceeded in earnest. By the third day, the water had risen up to the workers' feet. They stood on ladders to place boards and slather tar sealant. Iana had been slowly ushering animals aboard, setting them in stalls and locking them in as the boat was built up around them. Atrahasis visited her below deck to find her in tears as she slashed a sheep's throat. She looked up sadly.
Meat for the journey. The children are safe, in case you wondered. In the storeroom, your son found a reed wall he is convinced was from his bedroom, so they feel safe in there.
Good. It is more than most children will get.
Will it be completed in time?
Oh, it has to be.
Each day the downpour continued, the water rose a little more. By the fourth day, the workers were forced to abandon their ladders and work from the ship's deck. Atrahasis worked fervently alongside them. He paused briefly to look out at the land, now almost completely swallowed by water. Only the very tops of the city's houses could be seen. They would be gone within a day. Many of the villagers had crammed into a few small fishing boats, which they rowed through the submerged city. Atrahasis' heart swelled with hope at the sight of them, but his practicality warned him against optimism. They would not make it through the rough days ahead. Atrahasis grabbed the railing as the boat suddenly lurched. The waters were growing rougher, knocking the boat from side to side. Men were flung overboard and into the treacherous waves. They did not reemerge. The winds whipped around Atrahasis as he directed the few men that remained. Iana appeared on the deck, her eyes wide and her hair blowing wildly. Atrahasis looked at her in alarm. He was about to tell her to go below deck when a wave slammed against the boat's side. More men fell from their perches. The boat tipped precariously to the right. The ship slapped back down into the water, and Atrahasis fell to the deck. As he staggered to his feet, he looked around at the chaotic world. The boat rocked violently as the fierce wind threatened to capsize them. The deck was now completely empty. The city had disappeared. In just 5 days, the world had ended. Atrahasis closed his eyes.
God, Enki, we have done as you asked. Please, let us go safely through this tempest. If we survive, I promise to tell you a joke when I see you again. I cannot guarantee you will laugh, though.
Atrahasis huddled with his family in the storage space below deck. A variety of birds twittered in their cages amid the supplies they had procured. He sat there, watching his two children sleep on their mother. They were all that was left of humanity.
I should have tried to find room for more aboard. What king leaves his people to drown?
You did what was necessary. We cannot risk all of creation for a few lives.
They were my people! And now they float! Bloated and blue beneath our feet!
Shh! Let your children sleep.
Iana squeezed Atrahasis' hand, and the two silently grieved as the mighty storm thundered around them. On the seventh day, the rains stopped and the boat drifted. The family went out onto the deck to look out. It was a bleak sight. Water stretched as far as the eye could see, and it was so quiet. The months passed slowly, and the family busied themselves tending to the ship. Atrahasis did his best to entertain his children, but the mundane scenery reminded them that there was no end in sight. Until one day, they were jerked violently from their routine. The ship suddenly lurched, sending the family flying across the deck. Atrahasis' daughter was launched through the air towards the rail.
No!
Iana flung herself towards her daughter, grabbing her hand just in time. The dazed family looked around. The ship was no longer moving, but there was nothing in sight but an endless waterscape.
We must be on a mountain.
Iana, this could be dire. The boat could be damaged.
I'm sorry, it's just, I always wanted to climb a mountain. My love, you used to have a sense of humor.
Atrahasis frowned as he leaned over the side of the boat. He could see nothing in the dark water below. He sighed. They would have to wait. And wait they did. They sat atop the mountain for months. Their food began to dwindle. Atrahasis fished often off the side of the boat, but it rarely produced anything but debris or weeds from the ruined world below. Each day that his line came up empty, the anxiety in Atrahasis' stomach grew. He occupied himself by cataloging their stores as he paced the deck. They had a week's worth of food, maybe less. He could get by with only a bite or two a day, so the children and Iana could eat more. But the end result of his calculations were always the same. No amount of planning would help them if they did not find land soon. He confessed his worries to Iana, but instead of panic clouding her face, he was surprised to see her eyes light up. She disappeared below deck and returned with a robin.
The robin gets tired when it flies for too long. We will send it out. If it does not find a place to rest, it will likely return, and we will know
that there is no land for us to reach.
Iana smiled and thrust the robin into the air above her. They watched as the bird took off into the sky. Its wings worked vigorously until it disappeared from view. That night, the family gathered around a fire on the deck. A meager portion of meat was skewered above the fire's embers. Iana shared a look of concern with Atrahasis.
What is that?
Atrahasis watched Iana's face fall as she looked up. His heart plummeted as the robin flew down and perched on the ship's wooden railing.
The bird has returned. It is just as I thought. The land is gone, and we are doomed.
Coming up, the god Enlil realizes that he has made a perilous mistake. Now, back to the story. On a reed ship in the middle of an endless waterscape, King Atrahasis and his family were running out of hope. The flood sent by the god Enlil had covered everything in sight, and their boat had run aground on a mountaintop. Atrahasis leaned against the wooden rail of the ship, staring anxiously at the sky. They had released another bird, a swallow. If it did not return, it could mean the swallow had found land. Iana appeared at his side, and he began to sing softly.
The skies are endless, the stores are low. The children cry out their tales of woe.
Your children are scared enough without your mourning. We should focus on what lies ahead.
Nothing is ahead! Only more water!
First you moan about your kingdom, and now you mourn the endless water. It's as if only Atrahasis feels pain.
Their argument was interrupted by a swallow landing on the ship's uppermost sail.
Curses!
Atrahasis kicked the side of the ship repeatedly, avoiding his wife's sharp stare. Atrahasis looked over to see his young daughter staring at him and whimpering. He rushed to her side.
I am sorry. I am so sorry.
Sometimes your father forgets why we took this journey. We knew it would be hard, but the flood will not last forever. The land will return.
As Atrahasis cradled his child, he reached out for Iana's hand and squeezed it tightly. Iana was right. They had done what Enki had instructed. He had to trust in the god's plan. That night, Atrahasis stood on his deck with a raven in his hand.
Please, Enki, show me what this is all for.
Atrahasis threw the raven into the sky and watched as it flew off, disappearing quickly into the darkness. He continued to watch the skies for the next 2 days. Each day he didn't see the raven, his hope grew. Another day passed, and Atrahasis' mournful melancholy began to lift. He played with his children, kissed his wife. His faith had returned. On the fourth day, he lay on the deck, letting his children crawl all over him. Iana watched with a smile as Atrahasis lifted his daughter to his shoulders.
What a great beast!
Their moment was interrupted as the boat suddenly lurched.
Hang on!
What is it?
The ship tilted sideways as it sloshed in the water. The family was thrown towards the railing. Atrahasis' heart was in his throat as the boat lurched abruptly before finally righting itself. The family gathered close and watched in awe as the boat began to drift.
The water must be lowering. Oh, it lowers, my love! Look!
Iana grabbed her husband's arm and pointed in the distance. A crop of trees points poked out of the water, and more continued to spring up around them. The boat suddenly swung to the side as its bow hit another treetop. The family once again grabbed onto the rail for dear life. The boat slapped down into the water. Atrahasis staggered, using his arms to prevent his children from falling forward. Iana stumbled, but when she turned to Atrahasis, she was giddy.
The land has returned. I cannot believe it.
But you were so certain it would.
I was never certain of anything. I only hoped.
Hours passed, full of bumps and close calls, but soon the boat lowered enough that the family felt the gentle scrape of earth beneath its bottom. Around them, puddles of water remained, but the world had revealed itself once again. It was soggy and damp, littered with uptorn trees and debris, but it might as well have been paradise to Atrahasis. He stumbled off the ship and sank to his knees in the mud, his arms raised up to the skies, and tears streamed down his face. They had made it.
Iana, get the meat! All we have left!
You wish to prepare a feast?
No. We must make a sacrifice to the gods, to thank them for carrying us through this storm.
Moments later, Iana appeared with two cured carcasses. She laid them at Atrahasis' feet. He looked up to the skies, but before he could speak, the wind suddenly picked up and the storm clouds gathered.
My brother is a snake!
Atrahasis turned to see the god Enlil standing a short distance away, watching the family. Atrahasis quickly moved his wife and children behind him. He could tell by Enlil's beady eyes that he was no friend, just as he could tell by Enlil's immense height and marble-like skin that he was no man. There was a faint yellow glow surrounding the god, which turned to a reddish hue as his upper lip curled.
Brother! Come!
You call me like a dog?
Atrahasis nearly melted in relief as his friend, the god Enki, strode leisurely from behind the roots of an upturned tree. Enki fixed his brother with his familiar smirk as he went to stand beside Atrahasis.
How are you feeling, old friend?
Tired.
Enlil threw a gust of wind at Enki, causing him to stagger. Enki fixed his brother with an annoyed look.
I hate when you do that.
I told you I would destroy all of humanity, not most of humanity. You have betrayed me!
Atrahasis is a nasty eavesdropper. I cannot help what was overheard.
Meanwhile, Atrahasis' young daughter had lost interest in the bickering gods. As she turned away, her eyes fell on a dead fish lying in a puddle. She moved to touch it, but her mother took her hand and held her in place.
You must think me an imbecile!
You should be on your knees thanking me. The flood was a grievous error. Who will build your canals now that the humans are gone?
It was not for you to decide!
Then why not get another opinion for the matter? Council! Can we agree this flood was pure idiocy from the start?
The storm clouds cleared above, and a sunbeam shot through. It illuminated Atrahasis and his family. they squinted at its onslaught.
There you have it, brother. The Divine Council has decreed that you are a fool. Not that anyone is surprised, but it is nice to finally make it official.
The Council can think what they want! I have Father's support!
The ground beneath them suddenly shook, knocking Enlil from his feet and into the mud below. He yelped and immediately stood, his face flushed with embarrassment. Enki, who had managed to stay on his feet, smiled conspiratorially at Atrahasis.
It seems as though Father has rescinded his support.
You insolent!
Enki winked at Atrahasis' daughter, who was still watching the fish. Suddenly, the fish jolted to life and began flopping about the puddle. The child giggled softly. Enlil paced frantically. The storm clouds swirled around the sunbeam. A shock of lightning lit up the sky. Atrahasis could see Enki growing impatient.
Oh, hurry up, brother. Make your choice, then.
You do not know the position I am in! It is a big job, deciding the fates!
Then let me make it easy for you. I saved the humans, the best of them. And do you know what makes them the best? They spent months worried if they would starve, with no one else in the world alive but them. No idea if help was coming. And the first thing they did when they stepped off their ship was sacrifice all the food they had left. To you, the malevolent god who did this to them. And this child, she still plays, despite all that has been done to her. It is what I love about them. Their resilience, their faith, their humor.
But they are so loud. They multiply so quickly that their noise becomes unbearable.
If your problem is their numbers, why not make it more difficult for them to procreate?
As much as I loathe to admit, you speak sense, brother. But some women should not be able to bear children at all. And virgins will be sacrificed to the gods, and the human lifespan will be shortened gently. Oh, and demons will prowl the earth, snatching children from their cradles.
That sounds unnerving, my brother.
It is done! Nintu!
The sunbeam swelled and blinded those in the clearing. Atrahasis lifted an arm to shield his eyes. When his vision cleared, Nintu, goddess of the womb, stood beside Enlil. She bowed her head as Enlil placed a hand on her shoulder.
It was Nintu that created mankind once, and Nintu that will form man again. But under my directive, brother.
Atrahasis watched Enki smile cockily. He gave Enlil a curt bow before strolling off. As Atrahasis watched his friend stroll away, he suddenly remembered his promise. He owed Enki a joke. Without pausing to think, he called out,
Enki! What is something which has never occurred since time immemorial? A young woman did not fart in her husband's lap.
Enki frowned for a moment. Atrahasis felt a surge of nerves course through him. After all these months, the first joke from his lips was about flatulence. He cringed, but then...
Yes! Oh, Atrahasis, old friend, it is good to have you back. May mankind bring us many more jokes, and perhaps consider taking more time with the next one.
Enki walked away, still laughing. Soon, he vanished. Atrahasis gripped Iana's hand and gathered their children together. He stood up straight, facing Enlil and Nintu. They did not seem amused by his joke. Nintu whispered in Enlil's ear. He nodded.
Nintu says that there is no longer a place for you here. This world, it will be for the new race of humans.
You send us away?
You have done well. My brother likes to take credit for all, but truth be told, you have impressed me. though I am still puzzled by this sense of humor my brother speaks of.
Then tell us where we shall go.
Enlil took Atrahasis and his family across many seas, where immortals lived in peace. As they departed, Nintu got to work recreating a human race that would procreate as a blessing rather than an inevitability. Atrahasis, surrounded by his family in paradise, was finally released from the guilt and duty that had burdened him for his entire life. He was free. The story of a great flood is found in multiple cultures around the world, suggesting that flooding was a real problem during ancient times. The Nile in Egypt was known to overflow annually, and monsoon season in Bangladesh caused widespread deluge. Mesopotamia, now present-day Iraq, is no different. The Tigris and Euphrates make up a large river system that runs through the country. These rivers and their tributaries frequently cause flooding in the area. Modern archaeologists have found flood deposits along their banks that date back to 2900 BCE. Though the deposit's thickness and layering indicates multiple floods over time, large-scale flooding would have certainly been possible. Iraq is positioned so that storms off the Mediterranean Sea would have fed into the Tigris and Euphrates. Therefore, a big storm over the Mediterranean could have caused an immense regional flood in Mesopotamia. Additionally, the same thick river deposits were found near Sharapok, the ancient city that Atrahasis hailed from, giving even more credence to the possibility that the tale was inspired by real events. The ease with which one event could cause so much death and destruction is unnerving today, but would have been even more overwhelming for the ancients, since they didn't have a scientific understanding of the world to comprehend what was causing these floods. They often saw them as a form of divine punishment. In many of these stories, the flood is seen as a dividing line that separated the ancient past from modern reality. There was a time before the flood when men interacted with the gods and mortals could achieve immortality. After the flood, humanity became what it is today. Atrahasis' triumph in surviving the flood and ushering in a new dawn of humanity gave a purpose to this overwhelming destruction. The slate was wiped clean, and humankind could begin anew, this time vowing to live better and serve the gods that had punished them. Thanks again for tuning in to Mythology. We'll be back Tuesday with a new episode. For more information on Atrahasis, amongst the many sources we used, we found Myths from Mesopotamia, Creation, the Flood, Gilgamesh, and Others by Stephanie Daly, extremely helpful to our research. You can find more episodes of Mythology and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify's making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals, like Mythology, for free, from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker. To stream Mythology on Spotify, just open the app and type Mythology in the search bar. If you enjoy Mythology, you'll love my other podcast, Tales. Tales presents fairy tales the way they were originally told, orally and unadulterated. Traditional fairy tales aren't exactly suitable for children, and every Wednesday we dive into another dark, classic tale. We'll be back next week with another epic story. Mythology is a Spotify original from Parcast. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Michael Langsner, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro and Carly Madden. This episode of Mythology was written by Kate Murdoch, edited by Greg Castro, and produced by Freddie Beckley and Isabella Way. The amazing cast of voice actors includes Tom Bauer, Bill Butts, Cameron Nicod, Nazi Tarsha, and Rebecca Thomas. I'm Vanessa Richardson.